bringing you news and information suppressed by the corporate-controlled media. This is Volcano Radio with Richie Allen.
I'd be really good to talk a bit about Ebola because there's just so much that we're not being told about it, as well as all this ISIS stuff we're not being told
about. Well, I'll tell you what, Tony, we've spoken a lot in the last few days about Islamic State, and the prevailing opinion of my guests is that it's complete nonsense. It's more of the nonsense that we were given 12, 14 years ago and all of that. Let's leave that then. Let's focus, because I've not focused too much on this Ebola crisis. So there was a nurse in Spain, this is the latest, we're being told, may have affected herself by touching her face with a contaminated glove. It's terrifying. We've got to send troops over there, don't ask me why, to either build some sort of centre or to assist in containing the threat over there. How are you reading this?
Well, look, this is a part of a pattern, isn't it, what we're seeing in Africa. Mali, Central African Republic, all of them we're being told, oh, we've got to send troops. I would have thought if you've got an Ebola outbreak, you send doctors.
Nurses,
troops,
yeah.
Number one. Number two is the reports that there have been, which we haven't been told about in the West here through our mainstream media at all, that the US biological warfare team were in the what is now being called the Ebola zone at the time it broke out. So what were that team doing there? Several people have asked this question. I mean, first of all, the actual evidence that they were there is pretty incontrovertible. There are reports online. I mean, there's one report which is entitled West Africa, What Are US Biological Warfare Researchers Doing in the Ebola Zone? And excerpts from supporting documents in there. So the question has to be, what is this biological warfare team doing at the scene of the crime? Because, you know, that you know, there has to be some sort of explanation from that. And there hasn't even been relating of it to the public, the viewers and the listeners. This is being put forward as something which is, has just kind of happened. And that there isn't any, there isn't any kind of background to it. The other thing is, I don't know if you've come across this one, Richie, but was the 8 aid workers who were massacred over there. And this is the sort of reason that they're giving, saying, oh, well, we need to have troops to protect the aid workers. But why were those aid workers massacred? There's still not been any explanation about that. And, I've been, sort of commenting on these on the radio here in Bristol, tweeting about them a bit. And it's really difficult to understand why the mainstream journalists who are putting this story across are not also saying something about some of the questions that there are. It seems what we've got is a really very controlled press, where you see all the different channels all saying the same thing from the same articles, from the news wires, and the same press release. I mean, the 8 experts and journalists visiting the southern region of West African state of Guinea were found dead on the 20th of September. They were there to educate people about the nature of the disease. Why were they, killed? Who were they killed by? These are the sorts of things that we really do need to know, and particularly any connections there are with the US war machine, because we know that in many other countries, AFRICOM, it's called, based in Stuttgart in Germany, is trying to place troops across Africa. In fact, it's in a covert war with the Chinese in Africa, because China is doing the same sort of thing, not with troops, but with financial aid, financial help for these African countries. What we're seeing actually playing out here is not being told to us by the mainstream press, is a settling out of all neutral countries, including in Africa, and obviously we've seen places like the Ukraine in Eastern Europe, a settling out onto one or other of the two big global camps. We're talking about the Shanghai Cooperation Agreement countries, that's China and Russia and similar, and the BRICS countries, which are pretty much the same, and NATO and Europe, EU and the United States, forming into two enormous great trade and political blocks behind our backs. And this is actually, if this is allowed to continue, a recipe for a world war, very much in the sort of Orwellian style. But we're not being told this by the mainstream press. If you don't believe me, look at the way this transatlantic trade and investment partnership is being brought in order to actually weld together literally the entire economic might of the EU and the US and completely cancel out any kind of influence of our elected politicians. That is what that Transatlantic Trade and Investment Partnership is doing, and it's all being negotiated in secrecy.
In secrecy. And to tell you, they say, oh, you're scaremongering. I interviewed Roger Helmer from UKIP a couple of weeks back. Ah, you're scaremongering, Richie, he said. I said, look, the leaks coming out of that, out of those negotiations are terrifying. Tony, let me just put this to you. It's slightly off track there, but because you mentioned the media, a sinister enough thing happened yesterday morning. I was, I'm up very early every morning. I go out and I do a bit of exercise with the dog, 6:30, 7 o'clock, come back, a little bit of brekkie, scan the news channels. And I'm not making this up now. And I wish I could have recorded them, but I don't have the equipment to do that from my television. Each of the mainstream breakfast programmes, Sky, BBC One and ITV, I swear on all that's sacred, each of them, at some stage in the morning, had a seemingly innocuous conversation amongst the hosts of the programmes about getting their flu jabs, Tony.
Oh, yeah, well, I mean, this is all preparing.
You couldn't make it up.
I think what we're living in a very, very propagandised world. And, I mean, there are just a few programmes around, you know, yours and mine and, you know, a few others around, where free discussion about this kind of thing is possible. And I really question the journalistic ethics of the kind of stuff we're being presented with, because most people can see that we're only getting one side of the argument. You know, look at the Middle East, for example. We're hearing a whole load of stuff about the horrors of ISIS and the massacres, but surely most people can see that actually Saudi Arabia has been beheading people for decades.
Decades,
in fact, in the month of August, for example, we've beheaded more people than ISIS did. That we've also got on the Allies' side, if you want, the British and the American side over there. Also, Israel, that massacred 2,000, mostly, almost all, I would say, innocent civilians just a couple of months ago where the Israeli Defense Force, the army, was unleashed on civilians in civilian areas and incredible amounts of housing for tens of thousands of people were just completely demolished. Now, you know, however bad ISIS might be, and they are appalling, you know, there needs to be some kind of balance to say, well, you know, it's not just one side that's bad over there. I mean, for example, we're hearing all sorts of scare stories here about people going over to Syria. We're hearing this day after day in our propagandized media, the mainstream press. But we're not hearing about those who, for example, have gone to join the Israeli Defense Force and have participated in the genocide of Palestinians. So, you know, there's all sorts of problems about the lack of balance. And I think for many people who have been used to trusting our press over the years, really up until about probably the late 1980s, sometime around there, we had a fairly balanced, trustworthy press with people like you and I, Richie, you know, working in television, in radio, in the newspapers, giving what we felt was, you know, the best account that we could to the listeners and viewers. Now what we've got is an owned press, and I don't blame the journalists for this either. I blame the editors and I blame the owners of these papers and the people that the papers are in hock to, because for many of the newspapers and the TV channels nowadays, they're not actually making a lot of money through, you know, the number of channels. It's quite difficult to make money from commercials. So the real problem is that they're far too close to the people who are financing them. And therefore, those people who are doing the financing, you know, the person that gives the loan is the master in that sort of situation. And so the banksters, the people that ran away in 2008 with about £750 billion of public money in order to prop up their lousy, crooked system, those are calling the shots in our press today. And they've used some of that money, of course, not just to buy up shares in the various media and to influence the media, but also to lobby for more liberalisation and less regulation of the banking sector.
Yeah,
so,
that's right.
So, you know, Gordon Brown said, I saved the world, didn't he?
Yeah, that's right.
In fact, what he did was the opposite, is he stacked up a whole heap of trouble for the future, far worse than ever been before. I mean, we keep hearing from the Conservatives, don't we, that Labour Party created the deficit, blah, blah, blah. Well, actually, the Labour Party, you know, is in part of their normal job, but just spending and borrowing in a very normal way. The real problem has been the financial system hoodwinking the politicians right across the Western world to bail them out rather than just let them collapse. And for us,
and that's another question that the mainstream media doesn't want to ask either, is why would elected governments of any state, of any sovereign state, go and borrow money from a central bank? We're never going to hear that question asked on any Channel 4, CBS, Fox News. Well, why are you going to a bunch of unelected bankers who have nothing to do with the country to borrow money that may or may not exist? We're never going to get into that, Tony, are we? Not on mainstream media anyway.
They don't, no. They don't ask any of the really big, important questions. And I think that's, I suppose that's how we tell. There's a propagandized system out there. You know, there's some really basic stuff like the printing money. When I was growing up in the 1970s, was done a little bit, I think, by the Wilson government. And it was, oh, there was a big hoo-ha about it at the time. Oh, you mustn't do that, printing money. Actually, quantitative easing is far worse than printing money. It's a similar exercise, this asset purchase program from the Bank of England. But it's much worse. Printing money actually does mean printing money. That means that the money is spent into the economy, it's spent on government spending, this kind of thing, straight into the real world. And it goes into real wage packets and that kind of thing. But QE doesn't touch the real world. It goes straight into the casino banking system to further prop it up, to prop up the prices of assets. That is to say, things like buildings, you know, office buildings. You know, all over the UK you can drive around, walk around and see empty office buildings. Well, the QE money is going into keeping those asset prices high on the balance sheets, because any business that's got a big building like that that's going down in value is liable to be basically go bankrupt, and the bank will say, well, you know, your assets aren't worth your liabilities anymore. We're going to just have to, you're going to have to go bankrupt. So all this money is going into propping up zombie firms and zombie banks in the casino banking world, and very little, if any of it, is trickling down into the real world. So, this is something that the US and Britain were doing. Now it's something just within the last couple of weeks, Richie, that the European Central Bank is now doing too. The Germans said for a long time that they weren't going to allow it, and they were quite right to do that, because basically what you're doing is you're getting your economy hooked on QE heroin that you won't be able to get off of, and also it means that you're slowly going to kill the entire economy as the bubble is created in this in the casino banking world of shares and assets. So, you know, that is the road we're going down, and none of it is being actually analysed and explained to the public that it's going to affect when, you know, the chickens come home to roost in the future. I'm not sure when that will be, but I would imagine that it's linked to this whole problem with the global settling out of the two big power blocks and the potential World War III. Because if a World War III does happen, you can be sure that that will help the financial people in our part of the world say, well, look, you know, this is what's caused the collapse. This is what's caused the crash. This is what's caused the bubble to burst, when actually they knew it was going to happen all along.
Well, not only knew it, but planned it in great detail. There's no doubt about that. I mean, you talk about that, the economics you just talked about there. We know there are clever men and women who have studied economics who are saying what you've just said there, Tony. But again, we're back to the same thing. And I get very frustrated, because I think listeners must be sick of hearing it. But we're back to the same thing again. They do not get access to Newsnight. They don't get access to BBC News at 6. They don't get access to Sky. There are clever people out there warning about this, but we're never going to hear them. Well, you and I will, but the vast majority of people will never hear their point of view.
Yeah, that's right. I mean, that's the failings in our press. I mean, I suppose the positive side of all this, if you can call it that, is that the austerity measures are actually bringing people together. I mean, I see it here in Bristol, that where people are actually in difficulties, and they do tend to actually, you know, as people do in third world countries, become more reliant on each other, maybe knock on doors if they've got a door and they're not homeless, knocking on the neighbours' doors, looking after each other, sharing stuff a little bit more, and actually coming together a bit more as a community. Also, you know, it's quite good to see the church has found a role in doing things like helping with the distribution of food through the food banks. And, you know, there is this almost like society doing its best for those who are in destitution, in real need. you know, who are actually, funnily enough, being blamed for the problems that have happened, even though it's got nothing to do with them, and they've got actually no way, no resources at their disposal to feed their family, to feed themselves, you know, to even to get a bus fare or something to the supermarket or whatever. So that is one positive side of all this. And in a way, I think, you know, we're starting to build a bit of a sort of civil society movement from people who are just, you know, not interested in what they're seeing on the television. They recognise it has nothing to do with their lives. They often don't read newspapers, but they are quite concerned about their neighbours. And for, you know, some people, it's the first time they've spoken to their neighbours for decades.
You know, I agree with that. It's something I used to lament, you know, especially coming from Ireland in the so-called Celtic Tiger in the boom years. People became so obsessed, and I know they were manipulated into becoming obsessed with material things, that they lost all interest in who their neighbours were, what their neighbours' lives were like, what their neighbours might have, you know, or might not be going through. And it became very commonplace. And when I used to present radio programmes in Ireland, people would come on in the morning and say, yeah, Richie, you know, I actually don't know the name of my neighbour. I don't know who he or she is. We just pass on the footpath, you know, and we might nod at one another. And I do see what you've just said there. I see a change in that. When I moved back up here to do this, I came into this community. Within a couple of days, neighbours were knocking at the door to see who I was, how I was, who's your partner, what do you do, come and have a drink with us. And that was alien to me. It felt very uncomfortable, actually, because it was so unusual. You know, that had been kind of beaten out of us, that empathy and compassion for the people around us. But I like you, I see that coming back.
Yeah, and I think, you know, it's becoming increasingly clear to me that that the whole sort of democratic process, I mean, this TTIP for the elite is the icing on the cake. It really completely voids any kind of influence of our elected politicians on the legal process, because the big corporations will simply be able to sue them. You know, that is, you know, it's unbelievable, really, that if you pass a law, say, for example, you know, which limits the power of a big private healthcare firm, saying, for example, we want a national health service, that big private healthcare company can then come and sue you and actually get you to change the law. You know, it's just amazing to think what they're doing with the Transatlantic Trade and Investment Partnership. And I haven't seen any proper analysis in our mainstream media about it at all. A few articles, I think George Monbiot in The Guardian did the first expose on it. But what this really means is pretty chilling. It means that the big corporations and the banks that finance them, and of course, really the banks are in charge, because as soon as they want to, they can collapse a corporation. They can make a mess of it, really. I mean, even small businesses, we know Royal Bank of Scotland have been deliberately doing this to small businesses, asset stripping them, forcing them to go into bankruptcy, taking all the property, even though it may even be a viable business, because they can. Because their competition of whatever business it is leaning on Royal Bank of Scotland, saying, well, you know, we don't like this business. Can you get rid of it for us? It's going to give us a bit of a bigger monopoly, and we can then start to charge what we want.
And that's a plausible scenario, Tony. That's a very plausible scenario, you know.
But this is I'm talking about on a really enormous level. So we're talking about the massive food companies, supermarket chains. I mean, one thing I would say is I had my first trip to Russia recently, and I was quite amazed to see over there a couple of things to do with basic stuff like food and housing. First of all, very little homelessness and people being able to choose whether they want to live in the country and the city or in the country or the town. Because there's a tradition of dachas over there where the old Soviet system was, and there is still the remnants of this today. Will give you a piece of land, basically like a large allotment, and enough space to build a place to live on if you want to live in the country. And people who are in the city have chosen to be there. And there's a lot of people growing their own food, kind of almost like the good life, you know, out in the countryside.
That Tony, my first guest, sorry to interrupt you, my first guest, and we've got to wrap it up then, we've got 60 seconds. My first guest tonight, Janice Barcelo, talked about that. And Janice said that 20% of Russia's food supply is coming from these areas.
No, that's right. And,
that's
and
extraordinary.
Also, I would say one thing you won't get across on the TV, you don't, or not even on Russia Today, I don't think, is the positivity amongst the youth over there is a completely different atmosphere. I mean, basically, if I was sort of 16, 17, 18, early 20s, so I'd be thinking about learning Russian and getting over there, because
good luck with that.
There's a really, the Russian is not easy to learn.
I wouldn't imagine it's quite
difficult, actually deciphering even some basic stuff. But the thing is, it's the land of opportunities at the moment, and it's quite clear that quite a lot of young people are coming together in the creative industries, in engineering, all this kind of stuff, and they are actually able to get reasonable rent, offices, properties, somewhere to live in the cities. And it seems to be like the more a land of opportunity than here is. Here it's very controlled by the banks. You basically, if you want to do anything, you need to ingratiate yourself to the bank to get your loan. The other thing that people don't get about the banks hardly ever is the way that they can write off debts. So a bank here, if it likes you, just says, well, I'll tell you what, we'll just write off all the debt.
Yeah, forget about that, yeah.
So, for example, the whole biotech industry has run on this. They made very, very little actual cash. I mean, obviously, the whole genetically modified food thing has been resisted very much in Europe, not so much in the US. And that's another thing.
Tony, you're going to kill me, but I've got to wrap it here because we've got 30 seconds to get out of the show, because this has got to be repeated on the loop then at 11 p.m, so we've got to get out. Do me a favour. I love you. I love having you on. Come back again real soon. Earlier on in the show, we'll have more time. In the meantime, your website is public-interest.co.uk. It's a pleasure.
Well, actually, the best place to go if you want some of my stuff is thisweek.org.uk. We were dealing with child abuse and the failure of Theresa May to address Westminster and Whitehall child abuse last week, and looking at satanic abuse in the United States, and wondering how the Tory party are planning to import that kind of Franklin scandal abuse here into Britain, because Theresa May just will not deal with child abuse. She keeps putting people in charge of these inquiries who are linked to the suspects.
And we're going to be covering that in great depth in the coming weeks, and I want you to be part of that. Tony, thanks for coming on. Good to chat with you.
And you, Richie. Cheers.
Bye for now. Bye. That was Tony Gosling there.
Wake up and smell the coffee at VolcaniaInternational.com.